Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Here's where we try to give a little bit of a Kabbalistic, mystical slant, or what we might call the inside story, a more, godly look at what's happening, at what's taking place in the world, what's going on around us. We're all experiencing this bittersweet emergence, coming home of hostages. These are captives that were taken, 240 were taken into captivity a couple of 6 weeks ago, around October 7th, on that very, very dark and horrific day. And we've watched this week the doors of captivity open up for some of those hostages. I think we're holding now between 40 and 50. And the first day on Friday, it was 13, and then it was another 13. In terms of the Jewish hostages, there were other nationalities that were also released. But I'm looking at it from the perspective of the Jewish people from the land of Israel. And we're trying to figure out what can possibly mean, what can this be saying to us, what could be this saying to the world. Now, when it comes to these things, to have absolute conviction of what it is, to explain them, one would have to have a level of prophecy, one will have to have what's called Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration. I don't think I qualify on those levels, or I know for sure I don't. So I'm not attempting to make these statements as absolute statements, but these are just ideas based on whatever I've studied from the mystical teachings, from Hasidism, from Kabbalah, and trying to apply it to what might be their inside story of what's going on. And now, of course, the behind-the-scenes wheeling and dealing about the release of these hostages is very, very questionable. What would be the right path for Israel? What it should be do? On the one hand, we're talking about saving lives. On the other hand, we might be jeopardizing so many other lives by allowing for this temporary ceasefire, which God forbid can allow the Hamas to strengthen themselves. So I'm not going into that, and I'm not a rabbinic authority to be able to give a clear halachic decision. I'm just looking at this. One thing is definitely sure, that there is what to celebrate, that there were people who were in dark dungeons, every moment their lives being threatened, suffering unimaginable pain of separation from their families, and who knows what else they've been through. So the fact that they came home is wonderful news. But what's this real story, possibly, of Hamas going ahead and, when they infiltrated this horrific massacre, made it their thing to take hostages? What was this all about? And this seems to have been like the spotlight in the story, other than the fact that they massacred over 1,200 people and tortured and did terrible things. But over here, they took these hostages, and that kind of is drawing the attention, drawing the headlines continuously for so many for the last over 6 weeks. What Hamas did, why they did it? Well, obviously, it's very beneficial for them. It gives them a certain security. They can use these hostages as bargaining chips. This is human shields. But I'm not here to explain all of this from a political perspective. I'm looking at the spiritual side of it and try to think, what is going on? So first of all, let's try to figure out who the Hamas, who they are. The fingerprints of Amalek are written all over this event. Amalek is the arch enemy of God. When the Jews came out of Egypt, Amalek, the descendants of Esau, of Esav, came and attacked when everybody else in the world dared to lift a finger against the God, the chosen people that were just redeemed with spectacular miracles where God took them out of Egypt. Everybody was terrified and scared. Amalek stood up and fought and waged war. In the end, they were defeated. They weren't destroyed completely. They were defeated. Moshe, Moses, sent out Joshua to wage war against them. He weakened them. But they remain a menace in this world until the coming of Mashiach. Mashiach himself is the one who completes the eradication of Amalek, and they're going to be here till the very end. And it seems to me that this is the last battle, and this is what we're witnessing. Now, just a little bit of why we can say that this is the act of Amalek, and based on that, we can understand perhaps the story of the hostages. This is something that I mentioned and I spoke about in a class already a while ago. Some of you might have heard this immediately after the event. There is a verse in Numbers, Sefer Bamidbar, Numbers, chapter 21, where it says, Vayishma haknani melachar. This is chapter 21 in Numbers, verse number 1. So it describes the Jewish people in the 40th year when they're in the desert. They're about to go into the land of Israel. Vayishma haknani melach arod. So the Knani, the king of Arod, Yoshev HaNegev, the one who lives to the south of Israel. He hears, Kibo Yisrael derech ha'asarim, that the Jewish people followed the path of the spies. Because 40 years earlier, Moses had sent spies who came through that same way towards the land of Israel. So now the Jewish people are following in, and they're following the lead of the original spies, and they're coming closer to the land of Israel. And Vayilochem Yisrael, so now he steps up, and he wages war against the Jewish people. Vayish mimenu shevi, and he takes captives. So this was interesting. A day after this, October 7th, on October 9th, actually, October 8th was still a holiday by us on Simchas Torah, but on October 9th, I woke up in the morning, and this verse was like kind of swimming in my head. And I think what really caught my attention regarding this verse is it says, Vayish mimeni shevi, that he took captives. And what was so horrific at that time was that we were all so worried and continue to be worried for the well-being of the captives. Here it emphasizes a nation grabbing Jewish men and women into captivity. But what really, you know, struck a chord and connected this, that this verse story, because we know the Torah is eternal. The Torah tells us stories of the past, but it's an ongoing story. The Torah is God's story. God relating the story of mankind and the story of the world. So there's always the immediate meaning as it applied in its simple meaning, but then every verse of the Torah has broader meaning as well. So Rashi, who's the great commentator based on Midrashic interpretation, says that when it says the Knani, Knani is one of the nations, Rashi says these are not the Knanim, these are the Amalekites. Okay? These are the Amalekim. Yoshev HaNegev, they live to the south, Zeh Amalek, this is Amalek. Now what's interesting is that this attack now, currently, happened in the south of Israel, right? Gaza is on the south of Israel. And they came in and attacked all the settlements, or many of the settlements, the Jewish kibbutzim, that are on the south of Israel. This was an event that particularly happened in the south. So Rashi says, who are the ones who attack in the south? It's Amalek. Shenemar, it says, Amalek Yoshev be'eretz ha'negev. Amalek lives to the south of Israel. So this is an area where we can assume that Amalek, the seeds of Amalek, are planted over there. Now they played a trick, Rashi says, why does it then say the Kanani? Amalek is a nation unto its own. They're not the Kanani. They come from a different lineage. Amalek are the descendants of Esau, which are from the descendants of Shem, and they're Semites, and the Kananim are Chamites. They're complete different people. It's a different race. Why does it say they're Kananim? So Rashi says, because they dressed themselves up purposely. They masqueraded, they camouflaged to wear uniforms of Kananim in order that the Jewish people should be confused, because they knew that Israel's power, the power of the Jewish people, is in prayer, the power of the mouth. So they figured if they will pretend and camouflage as a different nation, then the Jews will pray for the defeat of the Canaanim, and really they are not Canaanites, they are Amalekites, right? So they pretended this in order to play a game. And being that the Jews heard them speaking a language of the Amalekites, but dressing like the Canaanim, they prayed, God, give this nation into my hand, whoever they are. This attack, by the way, this current attack that we've witnessed, there was also many of the terrorists dressing up as Israeli security personnel, and that's what caused a lot of the confusion at the festival, and they dressed up as Tzahal, and that's why people were running towards them. It was same kind of ploy to a certain degree. It wasn't completely like this, but to a certain degree. But here is something else. When did they come? What did they hear? It says, Vayishma haknani, they heard. Rashi says, what did they hear? It says they heard something. So Rashi says, Shama shameis Aaron, they heard that Aaron the high priest passed away. Right before this, the verses before this, in the end of chapter 20, it says that Aaron passed away. So, and when we know that each of our, that Aaron brought to the Jewish people, in his merit, came the clouds of glory. We had special clouds of protection that protect Israel, protect the Jewish people. During the 40 years when the Jewish people traveled in the desert, they were protected from the elements. The desert can get extremely, extremely hot. It can also get pretty cold at night. So in order to protect the Jewish people from the elements of the desert, also you can have sandstorms, ant snakes and scorpions, and all kinds of other dangerous stuff. In addition to that, all kinds of armies or whoever it was that might be enemies of the Jewish people. So the Jewish people were surrounded by clouds of glory. This was divine protection for the entire time that they were in the land of Israel. I'm sorry, that they were in the desert, traveling for 40 years in the desert. Now, this gift that God gifted them came in the merit of Aaron the high priest. The manna, the bread that fell down, came in the, as a merit, and in the merit of Moses, of Moshe. And the water came of Moses' sister, Miriam. She's the one who, in her merit, came the water. Now, when Aaron passed away, these clouds left. So Amalek heard that Israel is exposed. They are exposed to attack, and that's why they attacked. So what's interesting is, what struck by in my mind on the day after this event happened, we know that once a year, we commemorate these clouds of glory. It's a yearly commemoration that we commemorate the clouds of glory protecting the Jewish people. And that is on the holiday of Sukkot, which called the holidays of the booths, which is a seven-day holiday in which we basically move out of our homes. Jews all over the world move out of their homes and live in a kind of makeshift hut, which resembles the clouds of glory. Now, the day, October 7th, this holiday concluded on October 6th. October 7th was a day called Shmini Atzeres. It's a day where we don't sit in the sukkah anymore. The holiday is over. It's another holiday which is attached to the other holiday, but it's still a separate holiday. It's not, it's no more sukkah time, especially for the Jews living in the land of Israel. So there was such a striking resemblance, because Amalek then waited for the Jewish people to be exposed by not having the clouds of glory. And in this case as well, they attacked the day the clouds, the spiritual clouds of glory that are enclosed in the sukkah walls, were removed from the Jewish people. So that merit wasn't there anymore, and that's why they attacked. So much of the verse seems to apply. We might even argue as well, we know that Aaron, his energy is the energy of peace and love. And he was always the peacemaker amongst the Jewish people. The Mishnah in Tractate of Ethics of in Ethics of the Fathers says, that Hillel says, always be of the students of Aaron, who loves peace and pursues peace. Aaron is always is seeking to make peace. That, and that's his energy. And that's also the reason why, in the merit of him, come the clouds of glory. Because clouds of glory, what's unique about it is it surrounds the entire camp, everybody equally. Everybody's equally protected. And that can only come when the people have a joint oneness. When people feel brotherly love towards each other, that creates, or that brings, the blessing of divine protection. Sadly, in Israel, the past year, it's no secret, there was a lot of infighting amongst Israel, amongst the Jewish people. There was a lot of friction going on. Now, that does not warrant a punishment of such a massacre. But what it does do is it could remove the unique divine protection. Enemies of the Jewish people exist in the world. They're ready. Actually, Rashi says, Amalek is such an arch enemy of God and of Israel that he is consistently standing on standby, waiting for the moment of vulnerability in which he can attack. So he stands. The moment he sees a breach, he's ready to attack. That breach is a physical breach where there's no physical protection. Like we see in this case, they actually came across a wall. They breached a wall. Somehow they figured out that what would have, should have been the protection on the southern border of Israel, they were able to breach that wall. But spiritually, the spiritual walls of divine protection were breached. Amalek made its attack. So these are all indications. And Rashi, to make it even further, Rashi says, Amalek is Ritzuat Mardas Li Yisrael. Ritzua means, Rashi says, Amalek is always standing like a whip. A whip that is ready to strike a blow. But the interesting words that Rashi uses, Ritzua. Ritzua means a whip. Ritzua also means a strip. So in Hebrew, the Gaza is called Ritzuat Aza, the strip of Aza. In English, we refer to it as well, Gaza Strip. The same word. So everything about this verse is implying that the attack that we've seen was attack of the Amalekites. To add to that, how many hostages did they take? They took 240 hostages. Amalek is the exact numeric value, the gematria, Hebrew. In Hebrew, every letter is also a number. Amalek is these four letters. Ayin, which is 70, Mem, which is 40, Lamed, which is 30, and Kuf, which is 100. 40, 30, 70, 40, 30, and 100 is 240. Amalek numeric value is 240. They took 240 hostages. But why were they taken? And again, the verse says, they live in the south, they waged war against the Jewish people, and they took hostages. Now, just for a moment, this idea that Amalek grabs hostages, and primarily women and children, is an event that's described also in Samuel, in Shemuel, where it speaks about King David, and it mentions that there was a town called Siklag, in which King David and his men had their families living there while they went to warfare, when they went to engage in a battle. And when they came back, they were told the horrific news that the city was attacked by an army, and it was an army of Amalek. They burnt down the cities. They literally went across and burnt the cities and took the women and the children as hostages. Literally, the same event that happened, because that's what Hamas was doing, burning and torching home after home and burning people alive. And in addition to that, they took hostages, and with special emphasis on women and children. So everything about these stories is indicating, in other words, it's got Amalek graffiti written all over it. Now, why would Amalek be so insistent on taking hostages? Again, from a spiritual perspective, there is another verse in the following Torah portion. This is Parshas Chukas that I told you this story. Parshas Balak, which is all about the prophet Bilam, the wicked prophet Bilam, who was called by the king of Moab, again, an ancient kingdom living in the side of Israel, who was afraid that the Jewish people would attack and conquer his land, although the Jewish people had a warning from God not to touch his land, but he was still afraid. He called in a prophet and called his, asking for his assistance that he should curse the Jewish people. His curses were very powerful. When Bilam came, God warned him that you can only say what I tell you to say, and every single intentional curse was flipped over and was exchanged for blessings. The greatest blessings the Jewish people got, they received from this anti-Semitic prophet who wanted to annihilate them. God literally put the most beautiful blessings in his mouth. But at the end, before he leaves and goes back home, he prophesizes about various different nations. He prophesizes about the Mashiach, the ultimate king of the Jewish people. But one of his prophecies, you can look it up, this is in chapter 24, Perek Chav Dalet, chapter 24, verse 20 in Numbers. Vayaras Amalek, Yisor Amalek, Vayisa Mesholei, and he lifted up his parable, which means he spoke a parable, Vayomer, and he says, Reishes Goyim Amalek, Amalek is the beginning of nations, which means they're the first ones who come and attack Israel when Israel becomes a people. They meet us at the beginning of history, the Achrisai, and the end, Adei Oyved. His end is he will be annihilated and destroyed completely. Which means at the end time, right before Mashiach comes, Amalek is going to be destroyed. It even is, says, based on another verse, that God says, I cannot place my throne in this world, which is going to happen at the time of the coming of Mashiach in the third temple, that God will place his throne permanently in this world as long as Amalek lives in this world. So Amalek must be completely eradicated for Mashiach to come. Now, what do you do when you know that your end is close? So you grab on to every straw that can give you some kind of an extension. Now, what I'm saying is, just like we spoke in the previous video, From the River to the Sea, that video which was called A Mashiach Proclamation, is that many times people act with whatever human, physical, material intentions, but what's really driving those actions are spiritual powers above. It says that every nation has an angel above. So I am not saying that the idea that I'm going to present is something that the Hamas leaders are conscious of and making the decisions based on that, but the whatever satanic forces they're plugged into, dark evil forces, which in this case would be the spiritual Amalek, that's the cause for these evil monstrous actions, directing what they should do. So here's a very, very powerful idea, Kabbalistic idea, is that in order for anything to have life, all life comes from holiness and from the side of goodness, because God is good and God is life. So the flow of life must come from God. So God gives life to goodness, to the forces of holiness and goodness in this world. So how does evil exist? Evil exists because there are sparks of goodness and holiness that somehow got mixed into the realms of darkness. There's a deep mystical explanation on it if you study Kabbalah, and there's a lot one can learn, you can research it. It's a mystical concept that explains that there was some kind of a primordial shattering of the vessels. This is a very, very spiritual, sublime idea, where there was a shattering of divine vessels which contained divine energy, and in that shattering of the vessels, sparks of holiness were flung very, very far away, and these sparks become the life force of the forces of evil and the forces of darkness, the forces of Klipa. These are these sparks of holiness. These sparks, the Klipa, which means the shells, the extraneous forces, the evil, holds on to these sparks because this is what gives them life. The work of the Jewish people in this world, since God chose Israel and gave the Jewish people the Torah, is to elevate these sparks, which means take these sparks are literally like prisoners. They're held in captivity by a husk, by a shell of darkness, of evil, that's containing a divine potential. And that's what's giving it life. According to the great Jewish mystics and Kabbalists, the whole purpose of all the mitzvot, all the good deeds and holy deeds and Torah study and all the observances of the Jewish people throughout all of history is to break the husks of evil and extract these sparks. Because when these sparks are extracted and they're elevated and they're brought back into the realms of holiness, they add enormous power and strength to the realms of holiness. They actually bring down the infinite light of the redemption, are connected to these sparks that are first to be found in the realms of darkness. Holiness, the forces, whatever represents holy and godly in this world, cannot trigger and can't bring down the infinite light of God. Can only bring down limited revelation of God. The ultimate, powerful, potent, infinite energies that are going to cause the resurrection and that are going to bring infinite blessing to the world and is what's going to cause the godliness that's going to shine in the holy temple, it's all related and triggered by the sparks of holiness that were sitting in the belly of evil since God created the world until today. And the work of the Jewish people over the millennium, over thousands of years of observances, extract those sparks of holiness. When we get close to the end of that extraction, what happens? Those nations in the world who have the potential to uplift their lives and to live a godly life, to them, the extraction of a spark doesn't mean taking it away from them. It means revealing their divine potential, and then that these nations then will start living a godly, conscious life. Like the prophet says, that in the end of days, God says, I will convert the nations that they will all serve Hashem. Then I'm going to convert the nations so that they will know God and they will serve God all together, shoulder to shoulder. And there are many prophecies to that. The redemption is not just for the Jewish people. It's for the entire world. But that's those people who have the ability that to live, their identity can, in other words, they're able to identify with living a godly life. But then there are pockets of evil that are so dark, their identity is so rooted in evil, that if you reveal the spark of godliness, then there's nothing left over of the previous identity. And those aspects of evil are eradicated and destroyed. One of those people that is pure evil that needs to be destroyed is Amalek. And therefore, to them, the meaning of the extraction of the spark means not a sublimation, but complete demise, a complete eradication. And that's why we have the prophecies that tell us that Amalek will be eradicated. Now, being that we are standing right now at the moment, moments before the redemption, the forces of Amalek have already sensed have deeply sensed and clearly know that the sparks of holiness have been completely extracted from them, and therefore they have no life. In order to extend their expiration date, what does the Klipa do? What does the forces, extraneous of forces, do? So this is another concept that's explained in many mystical books, is that the forces of unholy creep up to holy places and try to help themselves to sparks of holiness in order to strengthen themselves. In other words, they want to rob, they want to steal, they want to usurp energies that doesn't belong to them in order to strengthen themselves and be able to have more power in this world, more influence in this world. That's the deeper meaning of the reason why we have evil inclination, the reason why, what happens when, God forbid, when someone does a sin. Whenever we're good people, righteous people, but, you know, it falls for a temptation and ends up doing a sin, what does that mean? That means that their soul was hacked by the forces of darkness, and that good soul is feeding or delivering energy into the domain of the klipa of the unholy. That's part of the scheme of the unholy. They're always seeking to snatch energies more than what they've given, that God has allocated to them from the beginning, in order to strengthen themselves. But there is a very, very interesting verse in Job. And in Job it says like this. This is in chapter 20. In chapter 20 in Job, verse 15. In general, the whole chapter is talking about how evil and wickedness have power, but it's very fleeting and it's very temporary. In the end, it's going to be completely eradicated. One of the verses say like this, Chayil Bala, great wealth he has swallowed, Vayaki Enu, and then he has to vomit it. Mibitnoi, from its stomach, from its belly, Yerushenu Kale, God will dispossess him from his food that he has eaten. So the Kabbalists explained this verse to mean as follows. Exactly this point. When evil helps themselves and steals sparks of holiness from the holy realm, in whichever way form, when they try to take what doesn't belong to them, temporarily it gives them power, temporarily it can give them energy, but in the end, it works to their own disadvantage. What happens is those sparks, they end up vomiting that which they've already taken into their belly, that which they, even if they swallowed it, they've already taken it in, they end up vomiting it. Now here's what happens. When they vomit that, those sparks, they don't only return what they took, but they return it with interest. They return even the sparks of godliness that they owned, that was given to them from the beginning of creation, not what they have stolen, but even that which was there, and for whatever reason, it was inextractable. Because sometimes sparks of holiness become lodged in the evil in such a deep place that you can't extract it. No matter how hard we try, we can't extract it. They have to give it to us on their own. How do they give it to us? God puts it into their heads that they should steal more sparks that they don't deserve, to steal energies that they don't deserve. And when they steal those energies and take it in, that spark now, which they've taken in, acts as a magnet. They've taken something into their system, and while it's inside their system, magnetically it attracts all the fragments of tiny little sparks, which are potentials of goodness and holiness that are in captivity in the unholy, and it becomes attached to that spark. Now they have to vomit that spark and give it back, but when it goes back with extra. So this is an amazing divine scheme that God gets the evil to trick it. It thinks it's getting power. In the end, it's losing everything that it has. Once the sparks of holiness leave it, then it is kaput. Then it falls and it collapses, because lies and evil cannot exist 1 second without the power of goodness that is inside of them. Once you extract that, they are finished. So I think it's very clear. Hamas, which is Amalek, knows its day spiritually, subconsciously, knows their days are numbered. As a result of that, they picked up, being that they are Amalek, they needed to grab more holy sparks. There's nothing as holy in this world like a Jewish soul. That's literally a piece of God from above. They went and they kidnapped 240 innocent Jewish people. By taking these 240 sparks and taking them in, they were planning as a result of that to strengthen themselves. And even physically it's that way, because that's protecting them from the Israeli army that needs to clean up Gaza, but can't clean up Gaza all the way, because there are, first of all, they use their own women and children as human shields, but even more than that, they use the Jewish hostages as human shields. So you see literally how the physical is representing the spiritual. By holding on to these souls, they're planning to extend their life. But what happens? In the end, they think they're wheeling and dealing. I'll give you 13. You'll give us 39. It's all a divine master plan. These sparks have been sitting there for 50 days, how long as they were holding them. These Jews who were sitting in the dungeons of Gaza acted like vacuum cleaners. They vacuumed out all the fragments of sparks of holiness. When they are returning these sparks right now, they're actually giving it back with extra, with whatever they, with added energies that we could never have reached in order to cause them to completely fall. We would have never had reached them. And now that too is being given back. So this is really, really astounding. What is taking place? This is a divine master plan in which God's hands is over here. And hopefully very soon we will see the return of all the hostages and the complete destruction of Hamas. Hamas will not have any continued existence, because it's pure evil, and God will eradicate evil forever and ever. And then whatever has been returned, actually in there lies the ultimate messianic power. The ultimate light is contained in what is being extracted from the klipa. So we're watching a very, very dark and painful event, but there is a spiritual, godly, higher story that is playing out in front of our eyes. May we get to see it to its fully end with kindness and mercy and love. In a sense, God showed us his mercy as well, because the way the hostages came out, they came out in spurts of 13. 13 is the number of the divine attributes of mercy. God is winking to us with his mercy once and twice, and God is saying, I am here, I'm compassionate, and I am bringing you the redemption. Let us have Mashiach today.